serious business, Norma. Sit down.
Rick, I've been thinking things over.
Have you, Norma? Well, so have I.
What does that mean?
Here. Maybe you better look at tonight's paper. The story is on page one about Benji.
So?
In the storm of ignorance and lies, the salty captain resides, forever sailing the seas of misinformation. Survival is his sole occupation. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the fifth dimension with your host, Captain Fred.
You don't find people going into the ashram in the morning to meditate with their knees knocking in fear because of how terrifying and profound they know that meditation is going to be. That if they were going in there to smoke DMT, you know, they would be fully riveted on the modalities of what was about to happen. I mean, we can tell shit from Shinola. It's just that we don't always prefer Shinola.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain Fred. I'll be your host for the next couple of hours here on Revolution Radio. This is the first time I've been on air now for... And I'm not really sure if we're getting out on this right now. So if we can hear from a chatter, maybe we can... verify our sounds. Anybody in the chat listening to us today? Looks like Mer Bailey's in there somewhere. Hoping that things are coming across loud and clear. But what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about what reality is and what the community is. We're going to talk about the modality of a lot of things.
The missile knows where it is at all times.
Let's see. I'm having some errors here. If Mitchell is in the chat somewhere or somebody's around, I think I'm on Delta server.
You're good to go.
Oh, okay. I'm good to go. I'm listening and watching and. Let's play a little cut right now from, let's see, here we go. This is kind of the theme of the show today. And what this theme is a theme in logic and how to assess where you are and where you've been and where you're going. And it's really, it's kind of interesting because it was built to control missiles.
The missile knows where it is at all times. It knows this because it knows where it isn't. By subtracting where it is from where it isn't, or where it isn't from where it is, whichever is greater, it obtains a difference or deviation. The guidance subsystem uses deviation isn't, and arriving at a position where it wasn't, it now is. Consequently, the position where it is now the position that it wasn't, and it follows that the position that it was is now the position that it isn't. In the event that the position that it is in is not the position that it wasn't, the system has acquired a variation, the variation being the difference between where the missile is and where it wasn't. If variation is considered to be In the event that the position that it is in is not the position that it wasn't, the system has acquired a variation, the variation being the difference between where the missile is and where it wasn't. If variation is considered to be a significant factor, it too may be corrected by the GEA. However, the missile must also know where it was. The missile guidance computer scenario follows. Because a variation has modified some of the information the missile has obtained, it is not sure just where it is. However, it is sure where it isn't, within reason, and it knows where it was. It now subtracts where it should be from where it wasn't, or vice versa. And by differentiating this from the algebraic sum of where it shouldn't be and where it was, it is able to obtain the deviation and its variation, which is called error.
Well, I hope everybody thought that was somehow interesting. But how do we assess where we are in this existence nowadays without knowing where we've been? And how can we verify if what we think is where we've been is not in error? That's the interesting logic of this kind of inertial navigation. And I think that's what folks need to understand these days, is we can't navigate correctly until we understand the deviation. We tend to forget about the essentials of our life. We so often. But the narrative that people live by is a narrative that's in error. It's not complete. It doesn't add to the reality of our lives. It's a synthetic reality. And in that reality, we can kind of understand if we don't know where we are and we are in error of where we've been, if we believe we've been in a capitalist free election society, well then that's an error of our understanding, and it puts us in a really kind of ridiculous situation. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go back to some of my archives from the old Republic Broadcasting Network days. And there was a few shows that I think show me where I'm coming from, and hopefully show some of the listeners where they're coming from too. So with that, I'm going to bring up a couple of clips that I think are going to help us understand where I'm coming from.
Medicine. Medicine has its office. It does its share and does it well. But without hope back of it, its forces are crippled. And only the physician's verdict can create that hope when the facts refuse to create it. Yeah, you probably know who that was. That was Mark Twain. And for the last two or three weeks, we've been talking about cannabis that has been denied us for about 30 or 40 years. And I think another quotation from Twain that I really want to try to embrace today is perseverance is a principle that should be commendable in those who have judgment to govern it. And I pray that I have judgment to govern this perseverance on this topic, because it's important that this message be continued and be as much as possible enlightened and illustrated. There's a lot of confusion about medicines and about the good that they do and the placebo effects. There's always the placebo that's tossed into any discussion of cures or symptom alleviation. There's an article I dug up on a kind of obscure website called painscience.com by a gentleman named Paul Ingram. And he's a massage therapist, and I have a lot of respect for massage therapy for chiropractors, and I believe that sometimes simple manipulations of the body are the easiest way to achieve pain relief. He says, "I've been studying and weighing the pros and cons of treatments for many years now, every imaginable way of helping all kinds of pain problems and chronic injuries. Always, the most important question to ask is, does it work? But that can be hard to answer, and there are some other reasonable questions too. The choice boils down to Does it at least make sense? Is it safe, cheap, or reasonably convenient? Many unproven treatments get a pass this way. They might not work any miracles, but they are still effective, safe, and or cheap enough to be worth a shot. And then there's the ones that probably aren't. And treatment, I guess the three D's is what he illustrates. He calls it the three D's of pain treatment, and the verification of whether they're quack treatments. He says if it's dubious or particularly distracting, time-consuming, or dangerous, then the odds are this isn't something that you want to do. Pain's often a tough problem, and there's no perfect treatments for it. The worst possible treatment would score strongly on all three of the D's. The worst possible would be both dubious, dangerous, and distracting. And that being stated, that's they're most oftenly denied or ignored by people selling or using them. The problems are denied by the people that are selling them. And yet many of them are widely available, popular, packaged, and promoted actively and aggressively. And many of them come from giant, greedy industries. Make no mistake, selling false hope is big business. A simple ad I'd like to play. This is a spoof on an ad. Sam, you got that up for me?
At first, I was sitting in an empty room, filmed in black and white. I had a sullen look on my face, indicating I was suffering from some kind of debilitating illness.
And then an actress betraying his wife stepped up behind him and explained that the problem was only getting worse and that he needed to take action.
But how?
You should talk to your doctor about drug.
Drug?
Yes, drug. The legit-sounding medical breakthrough that just got FDA approved last week thanks to intense pressure from pharmaceutical lobbyists.
So I talked to an actor dressed as a doctor in what clearly wasn't a doctor's office, and he recommended I start taking drug immediately. Then the camera panned up and slowly faded to white.
Now we're being filmed in color, and everything is great.
That's right. We're not allowed to say that... ...and enjoying a delicious ice cream cone.
The drug manufacturers can imply that their product has clearly changed our lives.
This is the part of the commercial where we tell you about all the side effects associated with drug. It's important we get through this list as quickly as possible, so you don't remember any of the truly dangerous problems that we mentioned.
Problems like liver failure, suicidal thoughts,
bowel dislocation, and heart stoppage.
As well as sudden bouts of cannibalism. But don't you worry about that.
Because now we're surrounded by adorable kittens.
Talk to your doctor about drug today.
Drug. Vague statement of a better life. Or something.
Yeah, big pharmaceuticals are promising a whole lot of hope, and we've got to understand that their business is to enrich their stockholders and their presidents and pay off their congressmen. The pharmaceutical industry controls mainstream media, controls our Congress. So why not believe in mainstream media's subterfuge? But okay, let's get past that. We know now that that there is a lot of dubious things, and a dubious treatment requires that your mind be so open that it fall out. And some of the solutions defy logic. And I'm not talking about just the pharmaceuticals. I know some of the claims in the medical marijuana business are just as dubious too. But so if we start using the three D's to analyze the good that drugs do sometimes, then we have to look at the different treatments. generally not harmful. And then there's the dangerous. And a lot of people will say, well, what's the harm? Well, the pharmaceutical companies will spend a small section of their ad describing the dangerous, definitely difficult to understand from the speed that it's being read. But it, by definition, they have a bizarre history of hiding their failures and glossing over some of their successes, or glossing them, or putting a high gloss on top of what their successes. But some of these intense therapies that the pharmaceutical companies would like for you to believe in are not particularly safe, and they are dangerous. And the other D would be distracting. In other words, if it takes so much time and it takes so much money to be involved in the protocol, well, then it can become a distraction from what might even be successful in defeating pain. So if we'll use the three Ds, if all of these three Ds are there when you're working on a therapy or you're working on a protocol, then the odds are you're not really getting much benefit from it. You know, if you're being distracted from what you could be doing, if your doctor wants you to show up at his office twice a week and take a hit of some kind of experimental drug and you're feeling bad from it, and you not only you feel, well, it only really benefits probably the company that's selling the drug. But we here in at RBN for the last couple of weeks here on the Captain Fred Show, we've been talking about the qualities of medicinal marijuana, of CBD, of cannabis. And to qualify that kind of treatment, we look at the three Ds and we can say, well, it could be dubious. It may or may not be helping. I think that most people will agree that the relaxing effect along of THC has a relaxing and in general a beneficial effect on most people. It's probably a little underwhelming when you try it for pain. It does help pain. And it's definitely not dangerous. Over the thousands of cannabis has been used for medicine, for therapy, it's not shown to have any dangerous side effects, other than you probably overeat a little bit or laugh a little too much. So what do we gain from dialectic where we discuss the benefits of something that's been made illegal by our congressman, but made illegal for the benefit of large corporations? Well, we have to understand that we've been lied to for quite a while. We've been lied to just about all the time. So what we want to try to do is set a little bit of not necessarily truth, but we're going to let you decide the truth. We're going to try to put together some information. Most people that are experimenting or are using cannabis for pain mitigation are having quite a bit of success with it. And that's one of the reasons why it has been so successful and so popular in Colorado. And to help to clarify and to disseminate true or at least real information from the users, from the growers, I've made an effort to bring in Jim Strang of Green Acres Hemp Farm, who's actively growing hemp, who's actively growing medical marijuana. There is a difference. And his understanding it's like everybody else's right now. He's learning, he's experimenting, but at least continue this live. And with that, I'd like to introduce Jim Strang of Green Acres. Jim, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
Well, I'm feeling much better today. I'm back here at home in Texas, and since I've been back, I don't think the temperature's broke 90 degrees, which is really unusual. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. We're just up here in Pagosa at the farmer's market doing our thing, selling our products, and getting some great feedback today.
I know that probably happens constantly. What's going on nowadays? What are you hearing back from?
Well, we've been infusing these olive oil pills with CBDs. There's no THC in this product. And I've already had two people who bought some from us last week, and they're having some prostate problems. They're getting up 5 to 10 times a night. And just in the last week from taking our product, they are down to once a night. And they're also saying once they get up and they lay back down, they're going right back to sleep to be where before they were just kind of couldn't go back to sleep and thinking. So it's been a great, great feedback we've been getting on this product. So,
well, is anybody giving you any other protocols that they're using while they're using the CBD? Or are they drinking massive amounts? So I know you told me that I should be drinking a lot of water if I'm taking any of the CBDs. And I know that the olive oil is pretty mild. The refined THC CBD that I tried when I was in Colorado is pretty strong, and I would suggest anybody that takes that to drink plenty of water and really be conscious of what they're doing when they're eating that, because it is strong medicine. But
yeah,
I don't want to scare anybody. I'm just saying I think that people need to understand that what we're doing here is just exactly what I read about. We're trying the best we can to deal with pain, and we're using just about anything we can find nowadays because the pharmaceutical companies want us to be addicted.
That's right. Well, it's been amazing. I know we've been talking the last few weeks about it, and but now the one oil pills you took, the synthetic form, them are pretty tough. They do have a little THC, and definitely drink a lot of water with them. The olive oils, we're cutting that way back. But like I said, it's just been tremendous, the feedback we're getting.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think it use and these simple remedies that have been centuries in use for humanity have been outlawed. It's almost criminal what they've done. But the reason why I was asking about the different protocols that they may be is when I was there, I was spending at least 4 days a week soaking for 2 or 3 hours in the mineral baths there, and I found that that the relaxation along with the CBD, and it really did, it cleared my psoriasis up, and I missed that. But you know, there's a lot of other possibilities that could contribute to a more effective regime with your CBD. And I was going to suggest that a long soak helps. It's relaxing. It's also nourishing to the skin. Try to stay out of the highly chlorinated waters if you can. But I'd like to open up the lines for callers to maybe contribute to this, because I think it's important that we share these things and start understanding that this isn't a large pharmaceutical that's putting together an ad. We're individuals that found solutions to our pain. Not through the mainstream medical, CBD. But from our own studies and from our friends who's recommended things too. The number here is 1-800-313-9443. I have Jim Strang, the owner of Greenacres Hemp Farm on the line here with us. And he's, I'm not going to suggest that he's an expert, but I would suggest that somebody that's been growing, working in the industry might have a little bit more of a hands-on approach to this topic than associated with this particular protocol of pain relief. And that's how you got involved in it too. You had a bad back that was giving you a lot of problems, and you found that CBD worked. And also, there seems to be a continuing story everywhere. People are finding relief. The prostate issue. I've had prostate issues too, but since I've been on the CBD, I've not noticed anything.
Hey guys, Devin Burke, your wellness
and
health
and
fitness coach.
And
in this episode, I'm going to be sharing with you what CBD is and all the amazing benefits of using it. CBD, also known as cannabidiol, is a non-psychoactive, meaning it won't make you feel high. Sorry, guys.
Oops.
Compound found in cannabis. It's one of over 60 different compounds present in the CBD is usually present in cannabis in high concentrations along with THC, the compound in cannabis that is psychoactive and will make you feel high. Now, it's non-psychoactive because its lack of affinity and attraction to CB1 receptors, the receptors that cause one to experience that cerebral high. There are two different types of cannabinoid receptors in the human body, CB1 and CB2. And both are naturally found throughout the body, but are most common in the brain and the immune system. Now, CB1 receptors are responsible for marijuana's psychoactive effects. These receptors affect memory, mood, sleep, and pain sensation. CB2 receptors have anti-inflammatory effects and are found in the immune cells. So CBD has a great affinity and attraction for CB2 receptors, which makes it a great natural inflammatory and immune enhancer. So CBD has been proven to be highly beneficial in the treatment of seizures, neurological conditions such as MS and cerebral aid, help control and reduce seizures, help fight tumors and cancer cells because it's a very powerful antioxidant, help relieve anxiety and depression, calm and protect the nervous system, promote relaxation and deep sleep, help reduce stress, help relieve insomnia, is a natural anti-inflammatory which helps reduce swelling and also can help reduce muscle and joint pain. So, as you can see, CBD can play a key role in helping relieve many of these health challenges. But unlike marijuana, CBD is 100% legal everywhere in the world and offers many of the same benefits of marijuana without the high, which usually comes from the THC and the other prominent compound found in marijuana. Now, CBD is completely safe and is...
Hey, hello, Fred. We lost some audio. I don't know if you dropped out because I heard your service go dink a few times. I see you looking in the chat room right now. You're still on the call. Hey, Fred left. I guess he's going to try to reconnect. He's got some connection problems. Sometimes he's way up in the mountains. And hey, I'll just I'll add him back on the call.
Important to consider the quality, extraction, storage, and manufacturing methods before purchasing a supplement or product. Sadly, about 90% of supplements on the market today are ineffective and a complete waste of money because they simply aren't made from quality ingredients or they have poor extraction methods, making them useless and sometimes even dangerous. I recommend natural CBD sold at bengreenfieldfitness.com because it's an all-natural, water-soluble, nano-extracted, triple-tested for purity and sourced from organic cannabis. Now, I'm sure there are other great companies making quality CBD products out there. And if you know of any...
This gentleman is certainly on spot with what he's saying about it. And I'm not here to promote... The FDA and the federal government wants to see this as an experimental drug. And it's only been experimental in the last 90 years that they've had control of it.
fifth dimension.
But for the most of the time of humanity, we've been using it naturally. We've been adjusting the doses to fit our own needs. And what I've seen with the FDA is that there's a combination of misinformation, and with the DEA, there's a combination of misinformation, and these two groups are also dependent on choke points to
and products will continue to any because it can aid in the promotion of quality sleep, help reduce stress and anxiety, and act as a natural anti-inflammatory agent. And as we know, inflammation is the root of all disease. Now, there's no scientific studies to date showing any negative side effects of consuming cannabidiol regularly. CBD has actually been extensively studied and proven to have only positive effects. Dr. Sanjay Gupta discussed it in his documentary Weed, as well as on CNN and in various other videos on the web. Okay, so now you know what CBD is, the benefits of consuming it. So now you're probably wondering, well, where do you get it?
Studio B.
Well, as more and more scientific studies are released on the benefits of CBD, more and more products will continue to flood the consumer market. Right now, you can purchase a wide variety of CBD products online and in some health food stores across the country. Now, as with all supplements, it's important to consider the quality, extraction, storage, and manufacturing methods before purchasing a supplement or product. Sadly, about 90% of supplements on the market today are ineffective and a complete waste of money because they simply aren't made from quality ingredients or they have poor extraction methods, making them useless and sometimes even dangerous. I recommend Natural CBD, sold at BenGreenfieldFitness.com, because it's an all-natural, water-soluble, nano-extract.
Well, I don't know what's going on, to be honest. We're trying to work some of our technical difficulties out right now. Production is always different every studio, every place. I think that all the shows on Revolution Radio have taken their hits and have endured. That's one of the beauties of reality. It really kind of sucks sometimes. But anyway, we're playing a little bit of music in the background. It's 60 seconds at a pop if we can, so we don't violate any copyright laws. That was one of the things I believe I understand. But what I'd like to do now, since this show is about where we come from and how we know where we're going because we know where we come from, or we know that the deviation or our error, we can start to understand how we've been misled by the error of our understanding or the deviation from reality by the media. The media continually distorts our perception and distorts our understanding of where we are. So it's kind of confusing here. I've got Pat Rabbit here helping me a little bit on the Skype. And for some reason, Mitchell keeps coming up here on me, too.
That's why he's hearing us twice.
Well, the server's called me back. There's two of three on the call. Let me add Fred on the call. I'm going to add Fred to the call. Please don't call the server and put us on hold again. But Fred, I'm trying to add you to the call. You drop back out. Dun, 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 dun. I'm going to go back in, I guess, look on the back side. There's Fred. Hello, Fred.
Yeah, all right. Well, I've got a couple more hands than I need working on this, I think. I'm not really sure.
We're live. We're good.
All right. All right. All right. Does everybody hear us on the chat? I'm having a tough time doing.
No, we're good. We're good. What happened was we ended up on hold with two calls. That's what happens when you answer. And anyway, it's just a Skype, something that you have to get used to on Skype that's really funky.
Oh. Oh, okay. So once I'm on the call, I don't take calls, right? Is that?
You can take calls. You just have to merge the calls. You can't answer the green button.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that throws a lot of hosts off. That's okay. It's no big deal. Shit happens all the time. Well, and live shows. I mean, I've done 40 minutes of dead air and everybody's screaming at me. And I didn't see it. I'm just doing my thing, man. I'm sorry. So, yeah, it happens. It happens. It's no big deal.
Well, anyway, I don't know what part of the show got broadcast a while ago.
Your clip, you were playing a clip from your Old Republic broadcasting days. And somewhere in the line, one of the things that happened was because your internet service has done like mine did, it pauses and freezes in and out. And because I don't have the fastest internet, sometimes it kind of drags and you'll hear a bleep and you'll say, you're looking at your Skype and it says network error. And you're like, oh, shit. And you almost have to wait a minute for it to either completely drop or drop the call and wait a second and then connect back. It's, you know, doing just straight live productions can be problematic if we don't have fast enough internet speed. I, for one, really don't. And that's one thing that I noticed several times on your broadcast. You faded out, but then you came back in. And
you just got in, Mitch.
What's that?
It sounded like you faded out just then.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
That's just kind of the messiness of reality, man. Nothing really happens the way it happens on mainstream media. And I think it's because those guys got the money to afford the equipment and the people to manage their programs where it sounds polished. And that's the beauty of Revolution Radio. This is reality. And I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy listening. And now I hope that we're enjoying what we're doing here now. But I don't know really where to start back over.
Let me finish this. You played your clip all the way through because I got you back on and I went behind the scenes and hung up one call and you were on the other call. And I think that's another thing that probably confused you. You were taking signals from two different, you know, places. But that's okay. But we heard all through all that, and then we heard some of your music you were playing, and then that's when you kind of hung up and we reset.
Okay, good. So we're kind of good to go right now, right?
Yeah, we're good.
Well, I think what the kind of the direction of this program today was kind of a look back at what I've established as what the fifth dimension really is. And it's dimensional thinking. It's an idea of thinking past, present, and future all at the same time. And taking the past and understanding where we are now by understanding where the past was and understanding the direction that we've taken has been influenced by the past. One of my callers years ago said that the future is pregnant with the past. And I believe that's really one of the most appropriate things that anyone's ever told me about our reality. I mean, our future depends on our present to establish the future. And I want to try to enlighten folks to what I'm experiencing so that we'll be able to take this experience and understand the deviation, understand the errors that's been fed to us. There was one interview I was going to play, and I think I've still got time to play it. It was from one of the callers that I had years ago, William in Montana. He's a brilliant gentleman, William Benz. And he was a friend of Terrence McKenna. And we got together because I do play a lot of Terrence McKenna in my shows. But William died a few months ago, and I have a clip of him that I'd like to put two people so he can share from that point in the fifth dimension with us now in the fifth dimension. Let's see if we've got that clip in place right now. Let's go ahead and play that if we can.
And just about anybody I know. William, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
William, it's good to hear from you.
Captain. Yeah, I was, you mentioned that this whole thing about, you know, falling back in the fall and daylight saving time, you know, you said it didn't make much sense. Well, the origin of this goes way, way back, and it was actually introduced in a moment of whimsy. And one of the first mentions of daylight saving time appeared in a journal in Paris. And it was written by a guy who was 78 years old. And
Uncle Ben, right?
Yeah, Ben Franklin. But this was a Ben Franklin that was coming to the end of his ropes there in Paris. You know, he was an American delegate. And he sort of got caught up in the whole society there and you know, ended up being a little bit debauched. And at 78, he was pretty much, confined to his house. He had gout and gallstones and all types of stuff. And his friend was an editor of this Paris journal. And he said, hey, don't get so depressed that you can't join all the parties. Why don't you write something? And so Ben wrote this article about how he came up with this daylight saving time. And he basically said that, you know, he usually would, like, just, you know, go to these parties until 3, 4 in the morning. And one day his butler woke him up at the wrong time. And he got up at around 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning, and he noticed that the sun was out. And normally he wouldn't get up until around, you know, noon or 1. And he was shocked that there was so much sunlight. And because he was known in Paris, you know, as a thrifty man, you know, a man of thrift, and came up with all these ways of saving money, his friend said, you know, like when he was shocked to find out that all this daylight, you know, in the morning was being wasted, he came up with a plan, and he said, you know, if we would basically do this daylight saving thing, we can save on candles and on oil. But he wrote this, you know, in his journal. He said he wrote this article in whimsy. You know, it was sort of like, you know, playing upon his reputation and his scientific. But he didn't actually mean it, but it caused a real ruckus and an uproar. And so he started, his friend encouraged him to write more. And in his later articles, he started coming up with ways of, you know, getting people up early in the morning so that they will go to bed earlier. And he mentioned firing cannons down the road, you know, down the avenues to wake people up in the morning when the sun was up. And he just kept doing this in whimsy.
It falls right into the hands of the people that want to manipulate behavior.
Sure. And it was basically, you know, and then later, you know, you said that, you know, it was used during war to save on oil, to save on electricity. And so that was sort of like the origin, one of those interesting historical things. But, you know, getting back to the benefits of sleep and how to do away with sleep deprivation, which causes all types of ailments, not almost anything you can name, is exacerbated when you don't get enough sleep, because your body repairs itself in that deep sleep. And most people never get to deep sleep. They get into a restless sleep, but it doesn't allow the body to go deep enough to shut down enough.
Well, the brain doesn't the brain actually detoxify itself when it's asleep?
It not only detoxifies itself, it repairs its neurons. It repairs the synapses, and then the cells do a job. There's these little structures called the mitochondria, and if they get into a restful state, they can diagnose what's happening in the cell and make adjustments and make repairs. And more importantly, they are able to determine which cells need to go away, you know, to have this graceful death. And without that, the body ages very rapidly, you know, without that, you know, day by day repair. And one of the things that Frank mentioned was that, you know, hours before 11, you know, before midnight, are much better than hours after midnight. You know, it's almost, it can be as much as 1 hour before midnight. I would say, if you know about biological clocks, it's an hour before 11 is even better. It can be as much as 4 hours after midnight in terms of how the body experiences it. And one of the reasons for that is there's this gland, the pineal gland, in our brain, and it gets messages through the eye of when it's getting dark. And so, in a sense, it's not only what happens before 11, it's what happens before, you know, 10 or 9 or even 8. Because if you are in darkness and your eyes are getting a dark message, it sends a message to the pineal gland to make this melatonin. Which is this sleep, very powerful sleep substance created, you know, produced in the brain and causing us to go into this deep sleep. But one of the worst things is artificial light, because artificial light has a very damaging effect on the production of melatonin. And if you, and you know what happens when they set the clock back, it gets darker earlier, and we use more artificial light. And that mm-hmm. artificial light will stop the production of melatonin in its tracks. And, you know, you can buy melatonin, you know, in drugstores and health food stores, but it doesn't work as well as the natural stuff produced in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take it at the wrong time and you don't take it cyclically, it can actually have a negative effect on sleep.
You know, this is the chemical balance of the brain is so complex. And we've discussed this before on the fifth dimension, but, you know, a lot of people are relating sleep deprivation to a lot of our systemic diseases now, like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, because what happens is if you don't ever get into this deep sleep, you know, they talk about different phases of sleep. You know, when we first fall asleep, you know, we're, you know, some of us are very restless. We don't stay asleep. It's a tossing and turning. And then there's this thing called REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. And this is where most people or most research shows that this is where dreaming takes place. And dreaming, in a sense, is a very complex subject because in many ways it's the way in which our psyche sort of puts things down, you know, straightens things out. At least gives them a rest. And so even though the dreams, you know, are often very nonsensical and they don't make rational sense, what it is, it's a way of kind of relaxing the body, relaxing the brain, which there really isn't no difference between, you know, the mind and the body. And so once you get through this REM sleep, if you stay asleep, you get into this deeper restorative sleep phase, and that's when the body really kicks in to repair itself. And like I say, one of the things that gets repaired in the brain is actually neurological structures, because it basically puts you in this deep sleep. You are really in a very relaxed state. There's the body's activity is minimal, and the structures that have developed in our evolution to repair our body from wear and tear are allowed to do their job. And if you do this, if you lose sleep, every night you lose sleep, there's a little less repair that is done. And after this accumulates for 10 to 15, 20 years, that has a major destructive process, you know, a destructive result in the brain. And things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and all of these things become more evident. In cultures where people sleep deeply and sleep on a natural, cycle, circadian rhythms, which like you get more like in a rural environment than in a artificial urban environment, they find that these type of ailments are less prevalent, that these ailments really appear in an advanced digital culture especially. And I think we'll see more of it because people just can't overcome their addiction to these computer screens. And now they even make the computer screens so you can carry them in your hand. You know, there so many teenagers are going to sleep with their cell phone right next to their head. Right,
William, I'm going to have to put you on hold for a little bit, buddy. But that's not unusual for the Captain Fred show or the Fifth Dimension. We're going to take a short break at the top of the hour here. I guess the music is getting ready to start. And we'll be back. This is Captain Fred, Revolution Radio, Studio B. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Ignorance and lies, the salty captain resides, forever sailing the seas of misinformation. Survival is his sole occupation. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fifth Dimension, with your host, Captain Fred.
You don't find people going into the ashram in the morning to meditate with their knees knocking in fear because of how terrifying and profound they know that meditation is going to be. But if they were going in there to smoke DMT, you know, they would be fully riveted on the modalities of what was about to happen. I mean, we can tell shit from Shinola. It's just that we don't always prefer Shinola.
Welcome back. You've been stupid. We can recognize deviation, the error in our calculations of where we might be. The missile knows where it is because it knows where it's been, and it knows where it's going because it recognizes its deviation and makes corrections. That's what we have to do as a species, as a humanity, is to recognize how we've been misguided, how we've been brought off course by a set of errors that's been presented to us and we've accepted. I was listening to my friend William in Montana, and I'd like to finish that clip that we had from William, because I think that he had some really, really wonderful points to make about how sleep and sleep deprivation and the LED lights and things are changing the way the brain operates. And we need to understand these things about where we've been taken so that we can know where we're going. We need to understand that our minds are operating with a false set of stimulations, a false set of realities that have been given to us to help us deviate off course. And this error is not unintentional. It's an agenda. And the agenda serves those that profit, those that are greedy, those that have no, I don't really know what those people are. I don't know. I don't know how to relate to them. But let's see if I can bring William back here. Can we get William back on there? Well, we might have lost William on that. Anyway, back in 2017, there was a lot of discussion about UFOs, a lot of discussion about Bigfoot and paranormal experiences. We often take what the mainstream media gives us and hands it down, and we discuss it five or six different ways. And by the time it gets handed to us, it may be distorted. It may have error. And these things we need to understand so that we can correct our error. While I was hanging out at the hot springs, healing my illnesses, I was hanging out with some of my Apache homies, and I was invited to the Dolce UFO base convention. And in that convention, I met a couple of people that had a lot to say about these kind of phenomena. And it's really unusual to be able to interview or talk to people that had firsthand accounts. And that's what I believe is probably the only really good source of information, are firsthand accounts. And in that convention, I interviewed a couple of people that had a lot of information. And I think I've got that clip up now. Let me see if I can play that. I'm not really sure if I'm coming through, but I hope I am. I think this is valuable information.
And we're here at the Hickory Apache Reservation at the Wild Horse Casino, where they're having, I believe, the first of the UFO Dolce Base UFO Conference. And with me right now is Alan Tafoya, who is the master of ceremonies for this. Alan, can you help me out a little bit here? Because I just walked in. I thought it was going to be easier to get here. But is this the first conference? And what is this about? I mean,
well, this is the second annual Dulce Base UFO Conference. This is the second year, and this is the second year of my being the host of the conference. And we're having a variety of speakers that are covering, you know, many topics from collecting, you know, material from UFO crash sites to people that talk about, you know, angels, reincarnation, the UFO stuff, like communication with, you know, their hierarchy or whatever they want to call it.
Well, now, I think that the reason why this is an important area is because there's rumor that there's a UFO base somewhere close by here. Is that true? Or?
Well, at this point, let's say that it's kind of a little bit beyond being a rumor. And my personal take on this, because I am a full-blooded Hickory Apache, born and mostly raised on this reservation, I have a law enforcement background, so I used to patrol all these roads at night in the mountains, and I've personally never seen, like, a UFO base, but I have a tendency to believe that the actual base might be, like, going toward the northern Colorado, you know. But although some of the vents are out here, but, you know, if the technology is as advanced as they say it is, then, I mean, they could be anywhere, you know.
Well, there are a lot of unexplained phenomena in this area. A lot of people seem to think that it's because of the iron and mineral deposits in this area, but also being of a Native American descent, you'd have to believe, too, that spiritually that there's more happening here than just the UFO phenomena.
Well, I have a tendency, and of course this is just my own theory, is that, you know, if you really take the time to study the different ethnic groups, there always seems to be the situation with regard to the American Indians that they're more open to this kind of phenomena. And I think a lot of it is because, you know, we're more connected spiritually to our roots. And, you know, there's folklore that involves these different beings. And even if you look at the way they paint our people for ceremonies or the things that happen within the ceremonies, I always felt like there was a correlation between the two, even if it just comes down to the physical appearance of how they paint them and prepare them for ceremony. We do live in a land that's, you know, very rich in resource, and we have the water, the Navajo River that runs through our reservation. And we're surrounded, you know, by mountains, and, you know, it's kind of more of a military strategic, like, vantage point, if you ask me, because the Continental Divide does run through our reservation, and, you know, it kind of comes to an end.
Well, I know that between here in Durango, there's a lot of oil fields out there that somebody's certainly pumping something out of, isn't there?
Well, you know, New Mexico does have somewhat of an extensive, nuclear radioactive situation going, as well as the UFO situation, like the sites and the crashes. And, you know, Los Alamos Labs was basically the birthplace of the atom bomb. So because they have exploded atom bombs and stuff due to their kind of stupidity of what they thought they were doing.
Do you think it was stupidity, or do you think it was just planned?
I think it was just greed, because we have a thing that's like to the west of the Hickory Reservation that's called Project Gas Buggy. And at the time they were finding, you know, the oil wells and the gas and all of that stuff. And somebody with the IQ of, I don't know, they wanted to be known as geniuses, but if you're going to explode an atom bomb under the ground for the sole purpose of collecting all the pools into one area, what the hell are you going to do with radioactive gas? That's why they're always burning. If you go toward Farmington from Dulce, and if you just look up to the right side of the road, you'll see that they just have this thing that's continuously burning. You can't use radioactive gasoline or oil. You know, it's only good for burning.
So they're burning off all the residual gases from the radioactive
tests? Yes. I mean, it's a fact. I had a friend, and she did this documentary, The Nuclear History of New Mexico, and she talks about the Project Gas Buggy, and someone actually had a camera rolling. So you got to hear a lot of really interesting comments at that time, and they really didn't give a damn about that they could actually contaminate, you know, the area and the tribes in the area. They just were after the gas, and like I said, what are you going to do with radioactive gas?
I'm never surprised at the lengths that people will go to for the greed and materialism. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, they're contaminating the only earth we have, and it's been historic, even Chief Seattle, one of our more famous Native Americans, said that we have all the same God, and that if we don't take care of our only same planet, then we're still all going to be in the same place at the end of it.
Yeah, we're all gonna suffer and die for it. You know, it's just like, if you even look at the Dakota Access Pipeline. You know, they've been fighting to keep their water clean, and they want to run the pipes through that area for the gas and the oil and stuff. But And they keep saying that they got it in check, but then you keep hearing about these pipelines breaking and then oil starts spilling into the water. I mean, you know, it's just greed and it's power and it's just stupidity.
I live in South Texas most of the time, and believe me, the contamination in South Texas is just incredible.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Fly over any of the chemical plants there, and there's a plume around them all. They really don't care about us, do they?
Not at all. I mean, you know, the thing about it is all these rich people and the powers that are, what they don't understand is this is something that's going to affect their own blood, their children and their grandchildren. I mean, if mankind destroys this planet and contaminates it, we can't even eat off the planet or drink the water. I mean, it doesn't matter how much money or power you got, you know?
Well, that might draw us back into the same phenomena, the UFO experience. If there are beings that would, say, domesticate humanity, if they are domesticating us, and I've done some studies on the domestication of human species, they don't the Native Americans to be part of domesticated humanity because they're not domesticatable. They turn. I mean, this is my take on it. I don't think that us as descendants of the Native Americans are wanted because we don't see the same things the same way that other people do. We're less likely to be domesticated to commit the foul, ridiculous acts against humanity like polluting the atmosphere.
Well, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with culture and our spiritual beliefs, you know, because most people that are in the United States came from somewhere else, you know. And what I'm finding amongst people, you know, I'm an actor and I'm a singer-songwriter, so I go around the United States and I've been, you know, over the pond to the UK. But the thing that I'm really finding is that there seems to be a lot more of an appreciation for the fact that the American Indians do have their culture and it's a spiritually based culture, and we know who we are, and a lot of people don't.
Well, the culture of the United States now is greed and materialism.
Yeah. I mean, well, being that there is a difference, you know, the Native Americans look at the earth and say, yes, that's our mother, but I mean, you got to take care of your mother, you know? You got to respect her. You got to honor her. And when you're pouring, when you're doing all these radioactive nuclear testings and pouring oil into the water and into the land, I mean, that's not much about respect, you know? And I just think that that's the difference, even when you look at the UFO phenomena, how the Native Americans seem to have adopted even a part of that into their culture. Like the Hopis have the Kachinas, and they talk about the Kachinas coming from the sky. I mean, you don't got to be a rocket scientist to figure that one out. You know?
Well, I think that what's happened is that this culture that we live in doesn't hold a lot of the of native culture beliefs close at all. I mean, they've basically taught us from a very, very young age to commit murder, to not give the dignity to all animals and creatures on this planet. And it's a culture that continues to steamroll over the rest of the world right now. We have 177 military bases all over the world, yet they don't seem to care if we're poisoning our environment here. So if that be it, then they really don't care about us. They don't care if we are alive or dead. They use us to create weapons that destroy humanity, and it seems like humanity is the second stepchild to this existence on Earth, to most of the people that are, I guess, the people, because I'm not really sure that they are people, but for most people that are most creatures that live as one on this planet, they don't seem to, they're not living with us, they're living apart from us.
Well, even when you look at what the American Indians and indigenous people believe is that there is a way to live in harmony with nature and the world, you know? And so, I mean, You either live in harmony and have respect for Mother Earth, the planet, or you don't. And if you're not going to have the respect, and you're going to be destroying the planet through radio and nuclear power, or the gas and all the crazy chemicals that they're coming up with, you know, you're just bringing about your own demise. You know, and people just don't get it. This is the only planet we have. If you destroy this planet and it becomes inhabitable, we're all gone. We're done. Yeah. Doesn't matter how much money you got or how much power you got or where you think you're coming from. If this planet is done, it's done, you know?
I think that we are on the road to a different existence, for sure, but only after this short break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
We are on the road to a different existence, aren't we? And we wouldn't have even been able to expect that our trajectory would have been deterred. for so many people, this detour of our direction is almost predictable. We knew what was going on, but what we need to try to do now is let's go back to this show, because the next interview that I did at the Dolce UFO conference was with the most beautiful woman, 80-year-old Geraldine. And gosh, she reminded me so much of my grandmother, because my grandmother had a Bigfoot experience. And she lived in the southeast corner of Oklahoma when she was growing up. And she was born in Indian Territory in 1903. She, as a child, during the summer would sleep on the porch because it was so hot and humid. And one night, her and her cousin were sleeping on the porch after a rain shower, and it had cleared, and the road was all dirt. The road was muddy, and there was a bright moon. And my grandmother and her friend were awoken by a sound of what they thought was a horse that was walking up the muddy road. It sounded like a heavily laden animal of some kind. But when they got up and looked out, of course, their house was dark. When they got up and looked out, they saw a tall, hairy animal of some kind, two-legged, walking up the road. And when it came across from where they were watching this event, they saw this animal to look at them, and then it turned away and walked opposite them, and it just stepped over a barbed wire fence. Didn't have to lift it up. Stepped over a barbed wire fence and walked away into the dark. This was, and according to what I've been able to put together, this is the Boggy Creek Monster. The Boggy Creek Monster, it was thought to be folklore, but my grandmother was a hard woman. She was not prone to exaggeration, and I've never known her to exaggerate, much less lie. But Geraldine, she's one of these women, too, of the same cut, and I want to play that cut right now, please. Let's put that on.
We're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer.
That's not quite the cut right there. Let's see. Where am I at right here? I think it was 20. Maybe. Let's see here. Hang on a second. 2305. I have to hold on. This is my first show. So, you know, reality does kind of suck sometimes. So let's bear it and realize that we are dealing with with reality.
That land is gonna walk right into myself. That land is gonna see myself.
Welcome back. This is Captain Fred. I was in Tulsa, New Mexico at the UFO conference. I have with me a volunteer here that has a story, Geraldine.
Geraldine Julian.
Geraldine, you are you Hickory?
Yes.
Have you lived here all your life?
Yes.
Now tell me, you were saying earlier that you saw some large creatures. You saw a large ship, too.
Can yes.
you tell me, kind of from the start, what that was about?
Well, see, during the summer, I cut for people. I cut hay for people. And when my husband was still working, I have a tractor, and I cut for people.
Uh-huh.
And towards Stone Lake, where we have our annual feast, that's where, on this side, by the mountainside, that's where I was cutting. And then I had finished this one area for these people, and then I cut, I raked, and then while I was bailing, when I was almost my last day, I felt like somebody was watching me. And then that feeling just stayed with me. I looked around, there's nobody around, but then the feeling stayed with me. And then until another person came by, and then he was unloading cedar poles right there, that's when that feeling went away. And then the next day, I had to go up the road a ways, and then under the mountain, you go this way again, and then I had to come down again. And then there's a pond right here, and the road comes by the pond. And that's where I cut again. And then I finished cutting, and then I rake, and then I bailed, and then I didn't finish bailing. So the next day, it was a Saturday, so it's a good thing my husband was with me that day. And then we went out there again, and I started finishing up to bail. And when I was going towards the pond again, where the rope comes down, there was this thing standing. It's about as tall as this door.
How big is that? About 7 foot? 7 foot?
Probably 7 foot. Well, look at the door right there. And
well,
then,
well, this is radio,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Oh, well, it is like maybe 8 foot. And
it was large. It was two-legged animal? Or?
Well, at first when I saw it, I never seen nothing like that. So that's what I thought. I thought it might be a bear. But as I was getting close to it, it was standing on two legs. And his arms were on his side, and he didn't have no ears like a bear, and his head was just like this. And then I was going towards it, and then I kept going towards it. And then after a while, you know, since we were real close, I stopped. And then I just parked the tractor there, and then we were looking at each other. He was looking at me. I was looking at him.
What color was it?
Black.
Black.
Mm-hmm. And then,
was it covered with hair?
Yes, it was covered with hair. And then I didn't know what it was because I've never seen nothing like that here since I live here all my life. And I live out on the reservation with my grandparents, and I've never seen anything like that. And then,
have you seen that again since then? Or?
Yeah, let me keep
sorry.
Going. And then, my son came to my house, and he told me that some people, white people, were here, and they're looking for Bigfoot at Hoyt's place. He's going to be one of the speakers here today at Hoyt's place. Mm-hmm. And where I saw Bigfoot is just over the mountain. That's Hoyt's ranch. And he told me that there's a whole bunch of people out there looking for Bigfoot. So what we did was after 5 o'clock, we drove up there. And sure enough, at Hoyt's Ranch, there was a lot of camping trailers. But we didn't stop. We went by it.
How long ago was this?
That's what people ask me, and I cannot remember because I'm 80 years old now, and I can't remember nothing.
Well, you're 80 years young is what I would say.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Now, you also told me that you had seen some flying objects, too.
That was at the ranch. Well, anyway, see, when I saw this Bigfoot, I was telling people about it. I didn't keep it to myself.
Well,
wherever I went, I was telling people. And then one of our medicine men,
the most original interview that I ever did back on the RBN days. And what a lovely lady. What a wonderful time I had down on the Hickory Apache Reservation. Those are some of my favorite people down there. Anyway, I wanted to bring back some of these old cuts because it kind of lays out a format for where we might be heading here in the next few years or the few months or whenever we can. We need to start looking at where we've been, start looking at how we've been deviated by the error of our information.
we've been turned, we've been hijacked more or less by this bad information. And I think the best thing we can do now is to start understanding that we need to understand what the deviation is and how we can return to course and how we can get ourselves onto a more stabilized and in a mental, I guess it's more of a mental state than it is anything else. We've been destabilized and we've been deviated from our direction. We're a culture that has been consuming images and not producing any real new information. We've been embracing a synthetic reality. Anyway, I was going to try to bring on Mitch if he's around. Are you going to call me in here, Mitch, or you want me to wing this thing for a little bit longer here?
Oh, okay. You still winging?
Anyway, yeah, it's a beautiful day up here in the Rocky Mountains. The rain yesterday is finally cleared up, and we're getting a little sunshine. My solar panels are putting a little electricity in the panel. Hopefully, we'll be able to run more electronic equipment, get a little bit better up to the internet. When you're off grid,
you get juiced up. All right,
you're totally independent. You don't have a lot of rollback. If your batteries don't hold the generation, then or the power, then up goes the generator. The generator is the go-to power source out here off grid. We're camped out here at location that is about 7,800 feet, and we're 40 miles to the nearest Walmart, which makes it
God
pretty
bless
simple.
You.
We're in a small valley. I guess it's not actually a small valley, but it's one of the largest alpine valleys in the world. It's 60 or 80 miles long, 30 miles wide, and there's about 12 or I guess maybe 10 or 12 small villages and towns circling the valley. This valley has got one of the largest aquifers in the world. And this aquifer contains water that melts from the 14,000 peaks to the east and the 12,000 peaks to the west into this aquifer that is supported by a crystalline structure. It's one of the reasons why a lot of people call this the ET Valley. It's the location of some of the original cattle mutilations. It's the location of over 37 different religious ashrams, monasteries. Wow. It's really a thrilling place to live, and it's a spiritual place to be. We need to, or at least I need to, learn to embrace what's natural. Terence McKenna used to speak about if you want to learn things, you don't go to books, you go to nature. Go to the waterfall, go to the trees, go to the forest. If you want to learn about reality, go to nature, go to the wilderness. Yeah. That was one of the things William in Montana used to talk about too, is his home in Montana was his effort to achieve wilderness. And William in Montana was an interesting character. He was a friend of Terence McKenna, and he spoke almost a lot like Terence McKenna. And I'm going to play another clip of Terence's here. Oh, here we go. There's Mitch.
Hey, I thought I was here. Thought you heard me. Anyway, what I'd say is that, William is so right about the contamination that we pump into the ground and all the pollution that we have. I don't know if people realize how much crap we pump into the ground. And because we believe we drill a hole deep enough, a hole big enough, we can pump toxic waste into the ground. I mean, we pump almost 8 billion gallons of toxic waste deep into the ground, anywhere from 10,000 feet to several thousand feet deep. and it's all kinds of stuff. And the more toxic it is, well, the deeper they want to pump it. Now, well, you know, north of Denver, which north of Denver's Rocky Flats plant, weapons plant, and they did nuclear weapons production there. They have plutonium pits. They have all this shit. Some of it they were pumping deep into the ground and causing fracking type earthquakes in the 60s and 70s. And this is why we know that the government lied when they said, well, fracking doesn't cause earthquakes. The industry said it doesn't. We know it does, because as soon as they stop pumping that stuff into the ground at Rocky Flats, that the earthquake stopped. And so, you know, we don't realize how much we just pump into the ground and pray it never comes to the surface.
Well, you know, that was interesting too, because I don't know if you listened to the interview I did on the Apache reservation down there, but the Apaches believe that a lot of the oil that's, or the gas that's being burned off some of these wells is spilling contaminated or nuclear radiation contamination, spilling it into the atmosphere. I don't know how true that is, but it seems to me that if the gas comes from areas that have pollution been buried, then we're burning that and putting it into the air. I think the greed is what determines this. We don't have any control with greed. These folks that are these critters, what do you call these people that don't care about humanity or the planet? Are they humans, or are they like LBJ called them masters of infinity? Because he and I'm kind of like him. Anybody that doesn't care about this must live forever.
Well, what's the use of living forever if literally everything is toxic?
Well, if you're off planet, it wouldn't make much difference.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, life.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The pollution.
I mean, what's the use if, you know, everything all of your crops are mutated, all of the animals that, you know, drink water or are exposed, you know, get to be cancer and mutated and or something else along those lines. You know, humans are so we're short-sighted. And, you know, I guess we're like the dog that craps in his own cage and will lay in it. I mean, it's an indifference of learned helplessness that I guess it's hard to imagine, because usually those species become extinct.
Wild species don't do that. Domesticated species do that.
Well, that's true.
A wild species is respectful, or at least has, not respect, but let's call it, observes the dignity of the other animals. And it doesn't seem like humanity is getting much dignity or has much dignity anymore. We've been eliminated as far as being a thinking creature. We don't really think about anything other than what we've been told to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Obedient slaves is what pops through my mind. It really is amazing that, you know, people are not taught to think independently. They're just taught to do what they're told. And, you know, it's this public indoctrination system where, you know, you're told what to think and how to think and what you're going to be tested on. And that's all you have to know. Everything else in life is, well, a game. Yeah. An algorithm has your mind and you don't even know it.
It's been an easy plan laid out. You go to school, you get your 12 years of education, then you get your job, and then you work 30 years or 40 years, and then you retire, and then you die. That's the plan. If you want to have a successful life in this world, then
you're normal taught is normal. Yeah, it absolutely.
Do this, do that, buy this shirt, buy this coat, we're told to get this education and get a job and then we'll be somebody. And I think we need to discard this kind of culture. I'm not saying that we don't need to make plans, because plans are important as far as organizing our present. And that's what this show was about. It's the fifth dimension. It's the dimension of up, down, back and forth, forward and backward, in motion at the same time, and at past, present, and future at the same time too. Just like,
yeah,
like how you influence the future of this radio, how we do this, how William in Montana influenced the people that listen to his clip today. We don't know where our influence comes and goes. We don't know where it stops or where it ends. So, and the moments that we share are so almost identical in length in the whole comparison of time. It's really difficult to say these people pass much before us, or these people are live beyond us. We live almost exactly at the same moment in this millennium.
Because it seems that our life is so long, and in the reality of time, it isn't even a spark of a flash. And, you know, as you say, we are essentially living in essentially the same time as our ancestors, but we're just slightly removed from that. I would call it the forward echo of future. We never see it.
Not to use our natural humanity to understand where we come from or where we're going or where we've been. We've been diverted by this error of information. Our minds have created this error of direction, this error of where we are. And that's what I wanted to try to establish today, is that we do have past, present, and future. And what we do today determines our future. What we did in the past determines today. So we don't live yesterday. We don't live tomorrow. We live now. And I think Terrence McKenna had a term for it. He called it let me see if I can remember this the way Terrence used to say it. It's the presence of the experience, the felt experience, or the presence of the felt experience of the moment. And that's what people are missing right now. We're not experiencing this moment. We're experiencing, well, what if this injection causes sloughing, or what if this injection does this? We're speculating, we're assuming, but the reality of it is it just keeps our little feeble minds complicated with the information that we've been told. We're not contemplating the waterfall. We're not contemplating the marijuana plants that I've got outside growing right now, and how these plants are going to manifest in something that will make us feel better or that will help our consciousness. We don't think about things in the realness of the moment. We're the felt experience of now is what I think that the fifth dimension is about. We enjoy the presence of now, but everything we've done brings us to this moment, and everything that we do brings us to tomorrow. That may be too deep, huh?
No. No, not really. Every day is a new day to start fresh, to start anew. So often we get hung up on our failures, not only of just yesterday, but 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, from before. And we carry all that baggage. Well, what we don't realize is every day is a new day to break that pattern, that or that past presence of action or inaction, or what you shoulda, woulda, coulda done. You know, we have to stop being the, even when we know we fail and we hesitate, we have to try again. And if we keep pushing, we will eventually break through that barrier, but we have to keep actively trying. And, you know, the past is essentially just a flash of the presence to me, you know, because, you know, we live in right now, but the future is such a millisecond away that the past is the other millisecond away, and we live in all worlds at the same time. It's just a question of how we embrace our, I guess it's this thing about you tell a person's character is how they react to the different things in their lives and how they, you know, if they can pick up their pieces and, you know, work things out, sort things out and move on. And, you know, one of the things we see is that today there are so many people that are lost in that aspect where they can't make a cut from their past failures, their past addictions, their past loves, their past lives, and move forward.
To tell anew. The pot smokers here, right? I mean, otherwise, today on Monday, we'd be balancing our bank books and we wouldn't be talking about existence if we didn't have the psychedelic experience to help. And I always refer to Terrence McKitta's statement about psychedelics being the triangulation of consciousness. In other words, it gives us a more perspective or a different perspective on how we view things. And I think a lot of things do that for us. Meditation will do that for us. I always used to say that a near-death experience was a good way to start putting your life in perspective, too. And the near-death experience doesn't really have to mean that you have it. It could be somebody close to you that'll bring that experience of mortality to you. And that's basically the experience of psychedelics. And that's another reason, I guess, why I wanted to go back to some of the CBD and the cannabis shows that I did, because we're going to do a lot more cannabis shows. We're going to do a lot more CBD shows. Jimbo, my buddy down in Alamosa, has the hemp farm. I promise you, I forgot that June 1st is always his planning day. I talked to him last week, and he said he'd come on the show, but June 1st is his planting day always. So he's putting 2,500 plants into his field today. And, well, I sure hope everything works well, because he's using the new Delta 9 hemp plant, which is supposed to be just out of sight with CBDs and different kinds of cannabinoids. And I will be experimenting with that come up in the fall. But anyway, yeah, I think we've got a lot to look forward to here on the Revolution Radio. I think that the show, if we can get things kind of balanced out here with the technical side of it, and like I say, I do live off grid here, so we're running off of batteries and wireless data communication, so it may be difficult at times, but I think our listeners understand that by now. I think what I'd like to do at the end of this show is play another clip from Terrence McKenna. I don't know if we have.
Yeah, about 12 minutes.
We've got about 12 minutes. How much is the, let's see how what the length of this clip is right here. Well, we can play it anyway. We can
pick up
for this. Here it comes. Terrence McKenna, The Purpose of Psychedelics.
Here. Like my notion of what the psychedelic experience is for is that we each must become like fishermen and go out onto the dark ocean of mind and let your nets down into that sea. And what you're after is not some behemoth that will tear through your nets, foul them, and drag you and your little boat, you know, into the abyss. Nor are what we're looking for a bunch of sardines that can slip through your net and disappear. Ideas like, have you ever noticed that your little finger exactly fits your nostril? And stuff like that. What we are looking for are middle-sized ideas that are not so small that they're trivial and not so large that they're incomprehensible, but middle-sized ideas that we can wrestle into our boat and take back to the folks on shore and have fish dinner. And every one of us, when we go into the psychedelic state, this is what we should be looking for. It's not for your elucidation. It's not part of your self-directed psychotherapy. You are an explorer, and you represent our species. And the greatest good you can do is to bring back a new idea, because our world is endangered by the absence of good ideas. Our world is in crisis because of the absence of consciousness. And so to whatever degree any one of us can bring back a small piece of the picture and contribute it to the building of the new paradigm, then we participate in the redemption of the human spirit. And that, after all, is what it's really all about.
The redemption of the human spirit. That's what it's about. Well, Mitch, I appreciate your help today. I think that we will work these bugs out.
It's not that bad.
Yeah, it's not that bad at all. I think everybody seemed to be experiencing some problems on both sides of the studios, didn't they?
Yeah, Studio A was having some problems with Nick and Wendy and them getting on. Yeah.
That's true.
In fact, I went over and was helping Nick get connected while you were playing your first clips there, when everything was going, smooth.
I'm not really sure how much of it got through. I hope that the listeners...
I think almost all of it got through, because I was flipping switches behind the scenes getting the audio back.
Well, we will make improvements. If we don't get any better, then at least
we'll be okay.
Get more experienced at being bad, right?
Well, you remember who was the guy with the remote viewing guy? Colonel, whatever the hell his name was. He used to say that that they wouldn't allow people that smoked pot to join the remote viewing program. That was one of the things that the parameters that they had. And I really don't understand why they would want that, unless it's the mind that it's the mind that they can't control, maybe is the way to put it. They can conceptualize and theorize a straight mind and keep it compartmentalized. Whereas if you're smoking weed, which everybody has such a bad connotation in the background of history since they made it illegal in the 30s, I think it was 28, but since the time they made it illegal, they made it basically, you know, a racist thing, that it was black, it was bad, it was low class, it was horrible. And I really think, because that indicates a freedom to think. It's, I believe pot smokers can remote view. In fact, I know they do. And I just don't think they can be controlled. Go ahead.
Pot smokers remote view too often. That's the problem. They don't want them remote viewing all the time. I'm not really. Who knows what it is? We're a couple of potheads, but we're like Terrence McKenna said. We're fishermen. We're looking for new ideas or different ways to view things or feel about things. And don't do this. Who is? I mean, I don't see a lot coming from any other. I don't see anything coming from any other activities that seem to promise much other than psychedelics. I always used to tease people that there's nothing that they could do other than take a large hit of DMT or some kind of psychedelic that would completely change the way they feel and think.
Yeah, I've done a few shrooms. I've never had done any DMT. I have watched enough videos and clips about it to actually make me interested in doing dimethyltryptamine. And that's what we're talking about, DMT. But, you know, hey, I tell you what, I like to smoke my pot, and it kind of keeps me grounded and focused, if anything, because there's times where maybe I do have ADHD or whatever, but if I don't smoke pot, man, my mind just spins. It accelerates to the point where I can't think properly, in all honesty.
I think it affects people differently. I think that a lot of people are paranoid or have a high anxiety with THC. And my friend Jimbo, we've spoken a lot about it, and he believes that CBD is the recommended cannabinoid for people to get paranoid or have anxiety with THC. And that's what I think has been from what he's experimented. He's sold CBD to literally thousands of people for their issues in their pains. And we will have him on probably next week or the week after next. And he's got just thousands of people that he's kept track of that continue to buy CBD from him. And so I expect that we'll hear some new stories from him about that. Also, there's a couple of people I'm scheduling some interviews here in the town that I live. One gentleman has a just an exemplary pot farm. It's some of the best marijuana I've ever experienced. It borders on about 30 to 33% on some of his better strains. But he's so interesting because not only does he have a pot farm, he has a yak farm too. He raises yak in pot.
Raises yak? Oh,
yeah. Well, the beauty of yak is that it's a pure strain, and we don't have all the hormones, and they're all grass fed. I drive by the herds regularly, and all the yaks seem pretty happy out there. They play and they do things that you don't see cattle doing very often.
Yeah.
That's the kind of meat I enjoy. I enjoy that. We have a lot of grass-fed cattle up here in the high mountains of Colorado too. So what we need to start embracing is a better way to think about things. That's what McKenna said. Let's throw the nets out in the seas of experience and see if we can come back with some new ideas. The yak, the pot, the CBD. There's so many different things that we can start experiencing. We don't have to be fed the same all the time. You still there?
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. If we don't see, we don't try, we don't know. And you know, today scientists want to say, well, I want a peer-reviewed paper. I want to see it. And, you know, peer-reviewed is one part of science, but actually going out in the field and observing and writing down, you know, repeatable processes that you see in nature, you know, just as hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, they're going to save India from the pandemic. And, you know, the Americans and the rest of the world is going to look, well, foolish. And they should. And there should be severe consequences with all of this crap that's gone down. And particularly with some of the stuff that's going on up in Canada. But, yeah, it's going to be great. This is the Fifth Dimension. Captain Fred, I'm
well,
just
how much
sitting
time
here
we have
riding along.
I guess it's coming to the end of the show.
Yeah, we got about 40 seconds, probably.
40 seconds. Well, hey, listen, this has been a real pleasure for me. It's been a little bit nerve-wracking, a little bit. But I think we'll work some more with the details out, and things will smooth out. And hopefully we'll be able to get Jimbo back next week and talk about CBD. I've got my my friend Kyle, who's the yak farmer slash pot farmer, will be in here in the next week or two. And we're going to talk about doing things a little different. We're going to think about things a little different. We're going to feel better about the direction of dismissal. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. Revolution Radio is alive and well. Let's keep it alive. Thanks, Nick. Thank you.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was...